turn to Acts. We'll be reading from chapter 10 and from verse 1. At Caesarea, there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion in what was known as the Italian regiment. He and all his family were devout and God-fearing. He gave generously to those in need and prayed to God regularly. One day, at about 3 PM, he had a vision. He distinctly saw an angel of God who came to him and said, "Cornelius." Cornelius stared at him in fear. "What is it, Lord?" he asked. The angel answered, "Your prayers and gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God. Now send men to Joppa and bring back a man named Simon, who is called Peter. He is staying with Simon the tanner, whose house is by the sea." When the angel who spoke to him had gone, Cornelius called two of his servants and a devout soldier who was one of his attendants. He told them everything that had happened, and he sent them to Joppa. About noon the following day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up on the roof to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat. And while the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. He saw heaven open and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals, as well as reptiles of the earth and birds of the air. Then a voice told him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." "Surely not, Lord," Peter replied. "I have never eaten anything impure or unclean." The voice spoke to him a second time, "Do not call anything impure that God has made." This happened three times, and immediately the sheep was taken back to heaven. While Peter was wondering about the meaning of the vision, the men sent by Cornelius found out where Simon's house was and stopped at the gate. They called out, asking if Simon, who was known as Peter, was staying there. While Peter was still thinking about the vision, the Spirit said to him, "Simon, three men are looking for you. So get up and go downstairs. Do not hesitate to go with them, for I have sent them." Peter went down and said to the men, "I'm the one you are looking for. Why have you come?" The men replied, "We have come from Cornelius the centurion. He is a righteous and God-fearing man who was respected by all the Jewish people. A holy angel told him to have you come to his house so that he could hear what you have to say." Then Peter invited the men into the house to be his guests.
We're going to talk a bit from the book of Acts. If you remember, we've finished looking at the first letter to the Peter, a wonderful letter. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to start looking at Christmas, looking towards the birth of Jesus and its significance to the life of church. Earlier this year, we saw floods in Queensland. Most of Queensland was inundated with flood water. And we saw live images of the unannounced wall of water going through the town of Toowoomba, sweeping people and cars and buildings. And during that time, if you remember, the Wavenhoe Dam was one of the focal points. At one point, the dam was told that it was 175% full and continuing to rise. And the communities living downstream were warned to be prepared. Be prepared to move to higher ground should the floodgates had to be opened fully, or if the dam gives away. Because the moving water would have been catastrophic. So the book of Acts that we read from this morning is a record of the gospel on the move, the good news of Jesus on the move. Luke, who wrote the book of Acts, write in chapter 4, verse 3, "Many who heard the message of Jesus believed, and the number grew to about 5,000. Chapter 6, verse 7, "The word of God spread, and the number of disciples increased rapidly." Because wherever the gospel was preached, it had the power to change people's lives. And Acts chapter 10, we read this morning, is a very important turning point in the life of the church. The outlook of the church is going to change significantly with the moving and spreading gospel. The church had to be ready to cater for those who are being converted. Chapter 10 has the record of the conversion of Cornelius and his Gentile family and his friends. But I think more than that, it is the record of the conversion of the church. Let me fill in a bit of background information for you. If you remember, at the beginning of the book of Acts, Jesus has ascended into heaven, and they've got the disciples have got the great commission to be witnesses of this great news from beginning from Jerusalem to the ends of the earth. And Acts chapter 2, we have the event of Pentecost. The church is growing rapidly in Jerusalem. And in Acts chapter 2, on one single day, there was 3,000 people added to the church. In Acts chapter 4, the Jewish Christian numbers are growing. As I said earlier, there's 5,000 people and it's growing daily. Acts chapter 2 and 4, we are told that there's this unusual bond within the Christian community in Jerusalem. Chapter 4, verse 1, Luke says, all the believers were one in heart and one in mind. They shared their possessions. Each one looked after each other. There were no one in need. They had everything in common. Still a minority in Jerusalem, but Christianity is flourishing within the boundaries of Jerusalem. And when we come to chapter 7 and 8, we see God causing his gospel to breach the walls of Jerusalem. There's a great persecution in Jerusalem against the followers of Jesus. Stephen, one of the leaders of the church, is killed. Saul, a guy called Saul, he's attacking the church. He's stepping up his attacks. And we are told everyone except the apostles were scattered all over the country. But those who were spread, those who were scattered, they started preaching the word of God wherever they went. Now that the message of the gospel has breached the geographical boundaries, by the time we come to chapter 10, the church in Jerusalem has this issue, this significant issue. That's where the rubber is really starting to hit the road. How are we going to include the non-Jews into the fellowship? Those whom we have considered unclean, those people whom we didn't want to have anything to do with, those whom we look down on, how are we going to stand side by side with them and worship God? How are we going to take part in the Lord's table together? Because even though the gospel had broken these walls of Jerusalem, the geographical boundaries, it is yet to breach the tradition, the wall of tradition, the wall of nationalism, social status, the cultural practices. And as I said earlier, this chapter is more about the conversion of the church. God is preparing the church to what is about to happen, the influx of Gentiles into God's kingdom. People from every tongue and nation and tribe are going to be part of God's people. And even today, this gospel is on the move. And the principle is the same. Wherever the gospel is preached, wherever the gospel is spread, the numbers increase. So how should the church be ready for the gospel which is on the move? How should we be ready for the gospel on the move? So Luke gives us, I picked up three things that we should be doing to be prepared. First, in verses 1 to 7 of chapter 10. First thing he wants us to know that God is preparing people to receive his forgiveness. We have Cornelius, a Gentile, introduced in chapter 10, verses 1 to 7. And he receives a vision from God. Look at his description. He is working as a centurion of an Italian regiment in Caesarea. He's a Gentile. He's not a Jew. He's rich, influential. He's powerful. He seems to be a very nice guy. He really seems to be a very godly guy. In fact, four times in this chapter, verses 2, verse 4, 22, 31, Luke mentions that Cornelius is a good person. He's a godly man. And this is probably because Luke wants us to see this important fact that even the most saintly person is lost without the gospel. All his good deeds come to zero if he is not being forgiven by God, if he has not met Jesus. It's like the pearl collector in Jesus' parable. All other pearls that he's been collecting comes to nothing compared to what he finds in Jesus, the pearl of great price. Or the farmer who is working in the field, he finds this great treasure and he goes and sells everything he has to buy this great treasure. So God's desire for this Gentile, this non-Jew, Cornelius, is to know that there is something significant missing in a person's life without the forgiveness of Jesus. Without the forgiveness that Jesus, God's Son, offers to whoever believes in Him. That good people like Cornelius need the gospel just as bad people. So what does God do? He prepares Cornelius. He gives him a vision to prepare him. He creates in this unbeliever a hunger to know God's grace. He gives him clear directions. He says, go to Joppa and find Peter. He's living in this man's house near the beach. Bring him. He has a good news. Later in verse 24 of this chapter, we are told that not just Cornelius, his whole family, his friends, everyone is expectantly waiting to receive this good news because God has prepared someone for this message. People who are hungry for the gospel. And how often do we miss this point? That even without our knowledge, God is at work in people's lives, preparing them, softening their hearts, making them more aware of God. Maybe our neighbors, maybe our workmates, or even total strangers, people who are against the Christian message. God is at work in these people's lives, sometimes when we are praying, or sometimes even without us praying. So the first point Luke wants the church and us to know is that God is preparing people. Christmas is a time our houses get a makeover, doesn't it? We get our floors polished and get our walls painted, carpets get steam cleaned, broken bits and pieces get repaired, Christmas decoration box and the Christmas linen box get opened. What are we doing? Because this is the season for guests. We are preparing ourselves to receive people, don't we? I don't know about here, but in Sri Lanka, most of the time, people turn up at your doorstep unannounced. So you have to be prepared. So you have to have lots of food ready when people turn up. Knowing God is preparing people to receive His forgiveness, secondly, we should be prepared to receive those whom God is bringing our way. Verse 9 to 16. We have, while God is working in Cornelius' life in Caesarea, down in Joppa, or Jaffa, God is preparing Peter, a senior leader of the church. And at the end of chapter 9, after talking about Saul's conversion, the persecutor of the church, his conversion, we are told that the persecution has died down. There's actually peace in the country. Peter has been traveling throughout the country preaching the gospel. And he has had these two significant miracles happening in the last few days. One at Lydda, where he healed a man who has been paralyzed for 8 years. And in Joppa, there he has raised a woman who was dead. And in both these places, God has caused people to believe in the gospel. And the numbers have been increased and the church is flourishing. Peter is on a spiritual high, so to speak. And that's when God intervenes in his life. Because he has even a greater task for the church. Verse 9, the next day Peter is waiting for his meal and he's praying and God uses a food vision. He sees a large sheet lowered down from heaven. And when he looked closer, he finds all kinds of animals, clean and unclean. And there is this voice from heaven saying, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." Peter responds, "Surely not, Lord. I have never eaten anything impure or unclean." And the voice speaks to him again, "Do not call anything impure that God has made clean." And the sheet is taken up. Peter was not saying anything wrong here, was he? Because according to Leviticus chapter 11, God gave Israelites clear commands about animals which they could eat and which they should not eat. Those they could eat or they could not eat were considered unclean. Any association, like if you eat or if you touch these animals, you were ceremonially unclean. You were not fit for God's presence. And these various laws that's in the Old Testament earmarked God's people to keep the Israelites separate from the rest of the nations, to show that they are a set apart people for God. And Peter was just following what's written, what he has been taught. So what is God trying to teach Peter and us? And I think there's two things that he wants us to understand. The first thing is, he's communicating that people are no longer made clean by obeying commandments like eating certain food or doing certain rituals or going to a certain holy place or wearing certain clothes. Yes, in the Old Testament, before Jesus' time, these things marked God's people to be separate, to be different. Now, as Paul tells in Galatians, law was temporary or interim. Law was the guardian or the supervisor until the time of Christ came. Paul writes in Galatians, "Now that faith has come, we are no longer under the supervision of the law. Now that Jesus has come and died and rose back to life, people are made holy, people are made separate only by their faith in Jesus." Sometimes people often confuse between conversion requirements and marks of maturity, don't we? What we have to do to be saved and what we do after we are being saved. When people are generous, when people read their Bible, when they go to church, when they invest on other people, when they do good things after they are being saved. These are marks of maturity. These don't make you a Christian, but they show that you are a follower of Jesus. The only requirement for conversion is faith in Jesus. That's what makes you a follower of Jesus. In essence, what Luke wants the church to understand is, don't look for secondary things when accepting people. Don't look for secondary things for salvation, because it's only through believing in Jesus that someone is saved. And the second thing that this vision to Peter teaches us is that we need to accept people from all over the range. The church needs to have a heart for the lost if we are going to do that. We may not understand how hard it was for Peter or the first church to accept this shift. These are the people who have been taught from their childhood that they are the chosen people. They are the people of God. They have been taught that the Jews, the Israelites, are the first-class citizens in God's kingdom. And everyone else is unclean and second-class. And it would have been too hard for Peter to grasp this concept that God is allowing this precious good news of his son to be preached to unclean people. So sharing the good news would have been easier, but what comes next? Having fellowship with these people, singing together in a church, taking part in the fellowship meal, or sharing their possessions. How is this going to work? So they had to learn to see people in God's eyes. If God calls someone righteous, God's people should do the same. If God is willing to include people from all nations, cultures, backgrounds into his kingdom, the church needs to be ready to accept everyone. And this is something that is valid for the church today as well, isn't it? If we are to reach people around us, our hearts need to change to see those around us that they need the gospel. Those we walk past every day, they need the gospel. Despite their background, their age, their language, their profession, whether they are sinners or good people, they all need the gospel equally. Are we ready to do that when God calls people righteous? Are we ready to call them righteous? Which brings us to the third point, obedience. This is where, again, the rubber hits the road really hard. We could believe that God is preparing people. We could understand that we need to be ready to receive people, but still don't do anything about it. In this chapter, we have two significant journeys. One is the journey of Cornelius' men from Joppa to bring Peter. And the second journey is from Caesarea. Peter is traveling from Caesarea from Joppa to Caesarea. And these two journeys are expressions of obedience, aren't they? And I want to focus on the second journey this morning. And the second journey would have been a harder one. We are told that three times God had to tell Peter. Three times the vision came to show the sheet full of clean and unclean animals, and three times Peter refused to buy this dream, this concept. It's a bit typical of Peter, isn't it? He needs to be told three times before he gets his act together. Because it's not a simple matter, isn't it? Is it? It would have been a huge, huge step for Peter to ignore the Jewish law. Think of the implications. The moment he eats or he has some association with a Gentile person, according to the Jewish law, he will become ceremonially unclean. He will not be fit for God's presence. He will not be fit to associate with other Jews. Here is a prominent church leader. What will happen to his leadership? His status in the church? How is he going to stand and answer questions when he is being criticized in the church? Later in verse 28 and verse 29, Peter explains how difficult this was for him. He explains to Cornelius, "You are aware that it is against our law for a Jew to associate with Gentile or visit him. But God has shown me that I should not call any man impure or unclean, so that when I was sent for, I came without raising any objection." See what Peter is doing? He is acknowledging what God is doing. What God is doing in people's life, and God has been preparing his heart too. And Peter obeys the Spirit's leading, and he goes into the house of a Gentile to share the good news. And as he shares Jesus with Cornelius, we find at the end of chapter 10, his friends and his family, they are all converted. Friends, it is one thing to believe that the gospel is for everyone, but another thing to actively be involved in sharing the gospel with others. We look around and we see a broken world. Sin, corruption, pain, suffering. And we say the best medicine is the gospel. But we don't do anything to take this medicine to the people who need it. So to the believer, obedience means being active in sharing the gospel. As Jesus says, being a light on a mountain, being the salt that gives taste, and as Paul says, being the fragrance that spreads the aroma of Christ to others. If you look at our church calendar, two major events that we have is comes to the word attached international into them. Instead of having a baked dish night or an epic curry night, we have an international food tasting day. Instead of having a Bollywood music night, we have an international music night. Why? Because we live in a multi-ethnic, multicultural suburb. According to the 2006 census in Burwood local government area, 49% were born overseas. And 56% of people speak a language other than English at home. And in the next 10 years, Burwood is going to see an additional 8 to 10,000 people adding to this community. There are proposals to build buildings just right at the doorstep of our church. We will have a bit of traffic. But aren't you excited to see the opportunities that God is going to bring? That God is preparing people to come to Burwood, to our doorstep, so that we can reach them. And if our mission is to present the good news of Jesus to all, so that they may enjoy God's gift of eternal life. By the way, I'm not making that up. If I don't have the church bulletin, it's our mission statement. That's why we exist here, to offer eternal life to everyone who believes. If this is our mission, living in a multicultural, multi-ethnic suburb, we as the church has the challenge to be serious about and excited about multicultural ministry. We need to find ways to communicate this good news. We need to find ways to be welcoming, find ways to be involved in this community, have a heart for the lost. Last weekend we were at Blue Mountains and we saw how dangerously the bushfires has come close to some houses. And we heard on radio and TV, as the wind picked up its speed, people were warned to be prepared for the worst. Schools were closed, roads were closed, as the fire was rapidly moving. And friends, we have a gospel that is moving, which has enormous power to change people's lives and turn them to God. And this gospel is on the move, both visibly and invisibly, which is so exciting. And the question is, are we prepared for this gospel which is on the move? The challenge for us is to know that God is preparing people to receive this great news of forgiveness. And He wants us to be prepared to receive God's people that God is going to bring into our way. And He calls us to be actively involved and sharing. That is our obedience. And I pray this morning that as a church, as we come together from different backgrounds, that God will use us. God will cause us to see the great potential in our community, the people that we walk past, that they need the good news of Jesus. And that He will give you the sense that the gospel that you have in your heart, the gospel that you share with people, it has the power to change people and bring them into God's kingdom. We are going to reflect on that as we sing our last song, which talks about salvation belonging to